Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, or morning, wherever you are. This is Carl from ISF and Deviant Legion, and we're glad to have you here today. First off, I'd like to introduce our guest, a good friend, former partner, and very knowledgeable film person, Stephen Ronquillo. Say hello, Stephen.
Hello, and I like to say this before we go. Those of you of the Aborigine region who might get mad at us of using his life name today and mentioning those pictures of him that was taken, we're very sorry, and please don't listen to this.
Well,
I'm not
we
joking,
are going
man.
To be... No, I know. We talked about this. I want to just let people know that we lost someone very, very important to both of us, and that would be David Delesengu, otherwise known as David Guliapil. He was first a tribal dancer, an Aboriginal tribal dancer. He was discovered by Nicholas Roque for Walkabout in 1971, and he was a presence, and I do mean a presence, in Australian film. And he passed away this past week, and we're just going to do a quick memorial to him. So Stephen, I'm going to take this to you. What was the first time you saw David in a film?
Probably Crocodile Dundee.
Okay.
Hey, I never could.
Has,
you try to go to a video store and find something like Walkabout. That was an art film, and you have to find a very special video store that had art film.
This is true. This is true. We'll get to that film a little later. For me, I was in New York at the time when the Australian New Wave hit. This is in the early 80s, late 70s. And the first movie I ever saw him in was The Last Wave. And I just rewatched that a couple of days ago in preparation for this podcast. And let me tell you something. You see him on screen in a film, you're not going to forget that face. That face is like etched in my memory and always will be. I mean, seriously, in all his roles, he showed a physicality. And as I said in the preface here, he was an Aboriginal tribal dancer. But man, he just, when I watched The Last Wave a couple of days ago, you know, I mean, Richard Chamberlain, everybody else, and then there's him, and the older gentleman, too, in that film, the older Aboriginal actor.
Yeah.
But he, just phenomenal. I mean, seriously, his screen presence, let's talk about that. When you saw him in a film, what was your reaction?
Well, when I seen him in The Last Wave, Walkabout, blah, 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 I'm like, this guy is good. Oh, and literally, Criterion. It was one of the first three DVDs you put out. You have not done an upgrade on DVD, and you have not done an upgrade on Blue, but you do put out bullshit like Menace to Society. Fuck is our goddamn Last Wave Blu-ray.
Yes, this is Steven, by the way. You're going to hear all this. It's wonderful.
Well, pardon the dirty language, but where is it?
No, seriously. Oh, don't pardon the language. You don't have any worries about that on this show.
Yeah.
Don't worry about it. Seriously, you're right. I mean, we should have a Blu-ray of this. Now, luckily, on HBO Max, which is where I saw The Last Wave, it is the Criterion cut. It is the Criterion film, but it needs an upgrade. There's no question.
Yeah.
No question.
Definitely. Well, it was one of the first time, it was one of the first times Criterion dipped their toes into DVDs from Laserdisc.
Right. Right. And watching that movie, the last segment of it is basically in the dark. And you couldn't see a lot of it. Unfortunately, you know, but nonetheless, it's a great film. Now,
what I loved about it is how, okay, go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
I love how it starts out as this legal film and then it slowly metamorphosizes into, well, you'll have to see the movie yourself. But yeah, it does an extreme change and goes to places.
Well, you know, that's one of the things about that film, is it really showed the spirituality of the Aboriginal people, and he was the spokesman for them. I mean, whatever film needed an Aborigine, you know, they would use him. I mean, there's a short scene in The Right Stuff. There's that short scene in Crocodile Dundee. Which, by the way, has one of the best lines he ever said on screen. You know what I'm talking about, right?
No, what?
So in Crocodile Dundee, Linda Kozlowski and Paul Hogan are out in the wilderness, and it's night, and they hear something, and it's David, who plays a mate of Hogan. So they're talking,
mm-hmm.
and she has a camera. Do you mind if I take a picture of you, or are you afraid that your spirit will be taken? He says, no, she need to take off the lens cap.
Yeah. Well, the opening part of that punchline is, you can't take a picture of me. Why not? You need to take off the lens cap.
That's it. Thank you. Yeah, great line. And there's just a wonderful sense about him. In The Right Stuff, it's a very small scene where one of the astronauts crash lands and they're in Australia and they run into him. And it's just a small scene. And this is what he really was against in a lot of ways. Because it wasn't until the 90s, mid-90s, that he was able to do films with large parts. Basically, they would just throw them in here and there. And I always appreciated that, but I always wanted to see more from him.
Which
do you have
cut
a favorite
of the
film?
Right Stuff was he in? Was he in the theatrical or the longer cut that's on home video now?
He's on both. He's in both.
Okay.
He's in both.
But yeah, it says here he did three documentaries in between Walkabout. It was In Song and Dance, which I think is the film where Rogue seed him. Then No Bag Limit and The Morning Star Painter. Because he was
right.
A painter.
Yes.
But yeah, it even has his character in Walkabout, just black boy.
Yep. That's all it was. But that role, okay, when I finally saw Walkabout, which was in the 80s, I was in New York, and it was after The Last Wave. So I'd already seen him in The Last Wave, and I knew he was in Walkabout. I'd never seen Walkabout. So I went to a rep theater and saw him. He's phenomenal in that film. I mean, that film is a masterpiece nonetheless. You know, everybody in there, just the young boy is excellent. Jenny Agutter, who I love dearly. But Gulia Pill comes in, or Delathagnu, I guess. But he comes in, David comes in, and just it just changes the whole feel of the film. And again, this is a film, though it doesn't have the mythology and that sort of thing. It still paints a really fine picture of the native Aborigines and their culture. And it's fascinating. Go ahead.
I call that Australia porn. And what I mean by that is lovingly looks at the outback of Australia in this loving way.
And part of that, or most of that, is because it focuses on the natural inhabitants of that area, which is the Aborigines. And it's because of David that you have that whole sense of the outback as something magical as opposed to something scary and terrible like Road Games, for example. Right?
Yeah.
And
if you get a chance to see it in theaters, you should, because the photography in this one is...
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Just a phenomenal film. And since you talked about the photography, let's just... There are issues right now with IMDb, unfortunately. So I'm not getting what I want out of it. But nonetheless, it's the photography, everything about that film is phenomenal. You should definitely see it, and especially for David. What other films did he make a real impression on you? Now, we talked a little bit about Last Wave, but are there any others?
Yeah, 1976 one, where he played Billy for Felipe Mora in Mad Dog Morgan.
Yep, I actually approached Philippe to be on the show today, but unfortunately he has other things going on. But Philippe said he would be with us sometime in January. So when he's on, we'll certainly talk about David at that point in time. But Mad Dog Morgan is a lot of fun. You have a story about Dennis Hopper about this film. So why don't you talk about that?
It's Not Quite Hollywood. Have you seen that, Carl?
Yes, I have. Absolutely.
Yeah, if you're looking for a real base film, a great film on Australian film culture, get Not Quite Hollywood. But they tell the story where after filming one day, Dennis Hopper got drunk, and then the cops found him asleep in there. And his alcohol level was so high, I think it was like 10 times the normal human consumption rate, that they declared him dead, put him on a plane, and got him to America.
Now, did he come back and finish the filming, or was he all done?
I think he was almost all done, and they used Grant Page for a couple of faraway shots.
Okay. Wow. So one of the things that David never really had a chance to do, except for a couple reasons, a couple of films, was to be the actual star of a film. And there's a film that he did right after Mad Dog Morgan, which I never saw, and I wonder if you had seen it. It's called Storm Boy.
No, it's got right here, Storm Boy. He played Finger Bomb Bim, and he was nominated for ACTA's Award for Best Actor. That's the Australian Oscar.
Right. And They actually, 2 years ago, 2 or 3 years ago, did a remake of that film, which he played this. He played the grandfather of the person they cast as Storm Boy in that remake. So yeah. That's a very well-known film in Australia. Unfortunately, neither one of us has seen it.
Well, we can only see what we got access to. And
exactly.
That's the problem with a lot of this Australian stuff is that we really haven't gotten it out over here.
Yep. Yep. But,
and
but,
I hear it was a short documentary on the Mad Dog Morton called The Shoot a Mad Dog, and then Felix's short film, and then The Last Wave, of course, where he's credited as Ghoulie Pill, The Magic Art, Little Boy Lost, and Three Dances by Ghoulie Pill. That was all in 78, three short films.
Okay, now, I need to talk about this, okay? So the Three Dances is actually on HBO, and I saw that. And one of the things that it really does show is how he was a dancer first. And the physicality and all that physicality we talk about this actor, all comes from the tribal dancing. And it is fascinating to watch. And all you have to do is go to YouTube, say David Guyapil, because that's what he's known on there. And then just say Three Dances. It comes right up. But I actually did see some of the shorts. I'm going to mention a couple others before we're off the podcast here. But keep going with what he did. Go on.
1980 did a documentary, The Painter, Woon Woon in Sydney. And he was a painter himself.
Yes, he was.
He pretty much did everything in the kitchen sink. The other film that he made was a short film called Billy West. And then in 81, he did The Great Barrier Reef. And then, of course, The Right Stuff. And then a documentary called The Hunting Party. Then Rainbow Serpent, The Changing Culture, another documentary. It just seems like I read that in Australia. It seems like when they wanted to talk about the Aborigine culture and all that, Guyapil was the Aborigine.
Well, that's the whole point, okay? If you're from Australia, and I have a couple of Australian friends, Bill Cook, who moved down there, and Reese also, but we were talking on PM, and you know, he's up for, in the next week or so, he's going to get the highest civilian culture award that can be given to anyone in Australia. They're going to give that to him posthumously. But that's the whole point. He was the spokesman for his for the Aborigines, for his indigenous people. And because of that, the whole attitude toward them, and that comes up in The Last Wave, where they're all considered drunks and so on and so forth, all changed. It was all because of him.
Yeah.
You know, and what he did. But keep going, because there's a couple others I'll mention here.
In 86, he did Crocodile Dundee, which is really the biggest hit movie he was involved with over here.
Right.
And then one that, if you like killer crocodile movies, Dark Age is one of the best.
I don't know that. Tell me about that.
It's a... it's a Steve Harris is a ranger who has been assigned to deal with a massive saltwater crocodile. He finds himself in an Aboriginal community who believe the crocodile should be preserved since it contains the spirit of their past. Mm-hmm. So he has to figure out a way to get rid of the crocodile, while not disrespecting the Outback's, you know, the Aborigines culture and religion.
And their culture. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I will definitely look for. I'll look for that one. I don't know that one. So keep going,
yeah,
because I'm going to jump in relatively soon.
Well, no, next time, we're already up to 91. You know what's left, but Dark Age is one of those that the title would probably drive people away. I mean, it was just a giant crocodile. Now, what was the Dark Age? Its time is now.
That makes me want to watch the movie.
Yeah. And in 91, he was not in this movie, but in about 2004, 2005, he was put back in it.
And then finally got its premiere on the Criterion Channel in 2020, which is where I saw it.
Yeah,
and that's
and
until the end of the world.
Deluxe edition.
Criterion, and it's Until the End of the World, which is Wim Wenders' science fiction film, that when it was originally released, it was like 2 hours and 15 or 20 minutes, but the Criterion re-release in 2020 is 4 hours and 30 minutes. And I watched it in two segments. And David is in it for like the last of the first half and the first of the second half. And it was really good to see him. I had originally seen that in New York with the 2 hour and 15 minute cut. And I liked it a lot. I liked it a lot, but I could also tell that there was stuff not put back into the film and taken out. And then when the 4 hour and 30 minute cut came out, that's not the complete cut. Stephen, I mean, we both looked into
right. this. The complete cut is about close to 6 hours. And the only place I've ever seen it up for sale was on a gray market site that had it on their site for a couple of months. And then they had to pull it because of distributor rights.
Right. And he's very good in this. The film, just so people know what the film is about, it's basically this William Hurt gets involved in all this stuff with Solveig Dahl Martin, and it becomes this mystery that has to do with special eyeglasses. And Max von Sydow is in it, and so many different people. And I mean, it's just one of those vast, you know, just insane amount of people and an insane amount of different threads that all come together at the end. And it is a superb film. It was definitely on my top 10 of 2020 when I saw the revised cut of it. And I recommend it highly. Now, you've seen it too, right, Stephen?
I tried to. Somewhere in the middle, it got to be like you're a car that's stalling and you're trying to start it. You're like, okay, we're going to go to another plot thread. Come on, move to another plot thread.
So see, I think part of the problem that you couldn't get through it is because I'm a huge Wim Wenders fan, and I get Wim very, very much, and he is an individual taste. I really believe that because he does it. He takes his time. I mean, look at Paris, Texas. You know, that's what, 2.5 hours long.
And it doesn't even answer the central mystery of the movie.
No, it never does. And he doesn't. He never answers the big question because he doesn't believe that it can be answered. And he said that specifically in numerous interviews and printed articles that I've read about him over the years. I find him fascinating. I love Wings of Desire and that. But this particular film is probably one of his more difficult films to get through. I'll absolutely say that without a doubt. But I believe it's really well worth going to 4.5 hours. I do.
Well, it was filmed as a television miniseries, but then when it come over here, the distributors decided to cut it into a smaller cut.
The next film we need to talk about is Philip Noyce's Rabbit Proof Fence.
Over something. There's Dead Heat with him and Brian Brown. Another film about Aborigines and how they're treated in modern Australian countries. And then the Tracker. The Tracker is a film
Tracker is after Rabbit Proof Fence. So that's why I was
skipping
to Rabbit
Proof.
Well,
I got here in 2002. He beat himself.
Okay, well, we can talk about the Tracker.
Yeah. He won the Best Actor Award for the Tractor, but he lost the Best Supporting Actor Award for Rabbit Proof Fence. And he got the Inside Film Award for Best Actor.
Right. And I have not seen the Tracker. Have you seen it?
No.
No, but that's the one film where he was absolutely the main character. And from what I understand, it's phenomenal. I hate to say this pun, but I need to track it down. Seriously.
Yeah.
But I can talk about Rabbit Proof Fence, which is another one. Go ahead.
Rabbit Proof Fence covers an ugly thing that the Australians did, which was when they tried to whiteify the Aborigines the same way we did the American Indians. Forced them to learn our words, live our ways.
Right. And that's one thing, when I saw this, I immediately connected to the American Indian experience. And the one thing is, if you're looking at any, you know, what's the word that we hate? It's called gentrification. And in many ways, what they're trying to do is gentrify a race as opposed to real estate in this case. And anytime you run into that, it's not just about the Aborigines. It's about any culture that has been basically wiped out or tried to be wiped out of existence and gentrified into another culture. And so anyone who has an interest in that and really see the ugly side of it, you need to see Rabbit Proof Fence. It's phenomenal.
It was nominated for an Oscar too.
Yes. Yes, he was.
No, I'm talking about the movie. It was nominated for an American Oscar.
Yes, it was. It was. And well worth it, too. And if you've not seen Rabbit Proof Fence, you need to see it just for the film itself. But then again, also for David's portrayal of Mudu. And he's phenomenal in that movie. He's just friggin' phenomenal. Okay, so where do we want to go from here?
Next,
because there's
is
another
Blue Billy, One Red Blood, a documentary where he played himself again. Mimi, a short film, and Following Rabbit Proof Fence, which is about the movie. And then he's in The Proposition as Jacko. That may be
God.
One of the most brutal and violent westerns I have ever seen.
It's brilliant. It is a brilliant film, and he is phenomenal in it. Again, this was the period where David was reintroduced to audiences. Now, when we talk about Walkabout, okay, he's a young teenager. He's like 16 when he does Walkabout in 71. At this point, this is 35 years after that, so he's in his late 40s, early 50s. He has a whole different aura about him at this point. The face, everything about him is, you know, just so captivating. Seriously. And you just want to follow this character throughout this film. So tell us a little bit about what the proposition is about, Stephen.
It's about this guy who is a reformed outlaw, but he gets kidnapped by this sheriff, and he forces him to hunt down his brother.
And what part does David play in it? Well, we're waiting for Stephen to catch up.
I know.
I know. I do the same thing.
It doesn't say on Wikipedia what it shows his role in there.
Okay, so Jacko is someone who comes in and helps them track. Again, a tracker type of character who basically is hired by the sheriff. But then as time goes on, they see what's going on. He basically goes toward the ex-con in this and finally gets killed, actually, in the film. It's a great role. It really is a great role for him.
But
and again,
as good as it is, it is, when I say it's one of the more brutal Westerns out there, yes, I am putting it next to ones like The Honey Party, Soldier Blue, The Wild Bunch. You're going to see,
and
especially the last reel. That's when it gets...
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, you take a look at The Wild Bunch, or something like that. The violence there is very violent, okay? But you're also, you know, sort of prepped for it. When you go into films like the other two you mentioned, it's basically the slaughter of the Indians, and particularly Soldier Blue is just brutal. But this film, The Proposition, is like, idyllic, and then brutal fucking violence right in your face. Then idyllic out there, brutal fucking, and the last part of it is like no let up. It's just in your face. Just you can't escape it, and that's part of the power of the film. Seriously, would you agree with that?
Yeah, and who wrote the script to The Proposition, Carl?
That would be one of my favorite musicians. That would be Nick Cave.
Yeah. It's getting to be, if you see Nick Cave written a movie, expect someone kind and gentle to die horribly before the movie's over.
Exactly. Yeah, you got that one right. We got Nick Cave. Absolutely. But really good film, and recommend it highly. Keep going. And just
next
go, let's
is
go,
King Canoe. He played the storyteller,
which I do not know. I don't know that film at all.
He said the title of the film arose from discussions between Heer and David Guilipel about a photograph of ten canoeists pulling across the Afura Swamp taken by anthropologist Donald Thompson in 1936. It's the first ever movie entirely filmed in Australian Aboriginal languages.
Oh, I have to see that.
Yeah.
I have to see
and
that.
There's a version of it where the film is narrated in English by David Guilipel.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I have to get on my list and see. I mean, that's the one thing when we do a retrospective of someone that we really like that's passed away. There's just so much that they've done that we have no access to, or we don't even know that they did, right? And so there's so much there. Okay, so from there, where do we go, Stephen?
Crocodile Dreaming, a short film. And then he played King George in Baz Luhrmann's Australia.
Which, may I just say, he's the only good thing in it.
Yeah.
So.
And next is, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, since he's the only thing good in it, just find his scene, watch it, and then move on.
Yeah. In 2013, he did Satellite Boy. He played Jagamira.
Again, don't know it at all.
A 2012 Australian adventure drama about a young Aboriginal boy struggling to maintain the traditions of his heritage in the modern world when a mining company expands into the region.
You know what that sounds like? That sounds like Where the Green Ants Dream, which is Bruce Spence is in that film. And I'll get to that in a second because I want to just talk about something else at the end of this. But go ahead. Keep going.
Next is Charlie's Company, where Actor Award for Best Actor, he won. AFCO Award for Best Actor, AFCO Award for Best Screenplay. Cannes Film, Un Certain Regard for Best Actor. AFCO Award for Best Original Screenplay. Nominated, Asia Pacific Screen Award, SCCA Award for Best Actor. Nominated, SCCA Award for Best Screenplay.
And not available here in the U.S.
No.
Right? Well, we can't watch this?
It was selected as the Australian entry for the Best Foreign Language Film at the 87th Academy Awards, but it was not nominated.
Well, I need to see that, without a doubt. Okay, keep going because we got one more.
I heard that was his epic role. And he played Jimmy and Goldstone, Crazy Days at the Old Bumby Boone, Old Mick. Cargo, he played Docu. Storm Boy, he played the father of Fingerbone Bill. And then his last film, which me and Carl seen a trailer of, but it really hasn't gotten released over here yet. And that is My Name is Ghoulie Pill.
Right. And that's a documentary on him. Now, you did skip over something. Okay?
What?
And it's a short film. It's a short film that's available on YouTube, and I recommend it highly because I watched it yesterday.
What?
It's called Messiah.
It's not in
the
list.
Okay, and it's in my list, trust me. So Messiah was done independently. It's about this bickering couple that are going to the outback to this camel race. And their Volkswagen bus breaks down, and Ghoulie Pill is on a walkabout, and by the time they talk to him and he tells them about, you know, he talks to them back, they basically give up everything and start following him as their Messiah. It is really a good film. And again, it's a film that focuses on the Aboriginal beliefs and culture and mythology. And to see him at the beginning of his career on a walkabout and then near the end of his career at a walkabout is really, really something to see. So I recommend seeing this film. Put in on YouTube, David Ghoulie Pill, and Messiah, and it'll come right up. And I recommend it highly. So I wanted to basically make sure that everyone got a chance to know about that particular film.
Yeah. And his recognition awards was in 1987, he was appointed a member of the Order of Australia and given the Centenary Medal in 2001. He was nominated for the Heltman Award for Best Male Actor in a Play 2004 for a stage production of Ghoulie Pill. And A Portrait of Ghoulie Pill by Craig Ruddy won the 2004 Archibald Prize, Australia's Best Known Art Prize. In 2013, he was a recipient of the Red Ochre Award, which is awarded annually by the Australian Council for the Arts to an outstanding Indigenous Australian for lifetime achievement.
Yeah. You know, and if we take a look at what he's done and the impact that he's had on Australia and then our actual, you know, way we look at Australia and look at Aborigines, he has had such an incredible impact. It's amazing. It's amazing. So you've got any last words or anything you want to say about David as far as your personal feelings about him?
Yeah, I love, whenever he's in a movie, I love seeing him act, and I can't wait to see that documentary.
Mm-hmm. That's true. I can't either. And that should be out probably early next year from what I understand. One thing I did want to say, and I did mention briefly Where the Green Ants Dream, but did you ever see a film, an Australian film, and think that David Ghoulie Pill was in it, but wasn't?
Yeah, probably quite a few.
Yeah, I mean, or you take a look at the Chan of Jimmy Blacksmith. I swear he's in that movie. He's not.
Yeah, me too. But there's no credit.
Yeah. No, and well, what I'm saying here is that if we look at the Aboriginal culture on film, we expect to see him. He's part of that for us, 3,000, 5,000 miles away.
And he doesn't sugarcoat it.
Yeah, and that's the impact that David Dalasagnu, I can't pronounce it. I'm so sorry, David. But seriously, that's the impact that he had. When I said Where the Green Ants Dream, when I saw that he had passed away, that's a particular film by Werner Herzog that was filmed in Australia, and it has Jack Thompson in it, who, by the way, had a great interview that I saw on YouTube, and just had some amazing things to say. I know that when I contacted Philippe Mora, he says he has several stories about David that he'll share with us.
Yeah.
So it's not just the impact that he had on film. It's the impact he had on the people he worked with, the people that knew him, the people that loved him. And for all those people out there, just to let you know, we share in your grief. We celebrate David and his work, and we absolutely will cherish every moment that he's on film. And that's the last thing I really want to say about David. Any last thoughts as far as you're concerned, Stephen?
Yeah, I mean, it's sad how little we really know about Australian movies over here because we didn't get the B movies till the 80s. And that was because Australia did not want to promote the B movie side of their culture.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why Carl could see The Last Wave easier because it was easy to sell as a horror film.
And also an art film, too. It was, in New York, it was really marketed as an art film. At that point,
yeah.
You had Fred Shepsey, you had Peter Weir, and you had all these people, and you had the guy who did Mad Max, too. You know, those guys were big. Yeah, George Miller.
Miller was the one who really kicked the doors open over here for Australian filmmakers.
No, and that's very true.
Or would you say that he broke through the door? Yeah. Or would you say he broke through the doors with a Big Mac truck?
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is don't forget there's the Cars That Ate Paris, too. Peter Weir was there also. But, of course, those weren't released until the art films. But I will always thank Peter and George Miller for giving us Brian Trenchard Smith. Seriously.
Yeah.
And if you don't believe me.
He was one of the really the guys from Australia. And most of us over here don't know the guys. Like, I will put him on there, Bruce Spence, Frank Frigg.
Oh, yeah.
Of
you know
course,
I love Frank.
Yeah. Jack Thompson.
Mm-hmm.
And the guys from the guy who played like Mel Gibson's police chief in
Use Kern Smith or something
Roger
like that.
Roger Ward.
Oh, Roger Ward. Yeah.
And the guy who died last year who played like the toll cutter in Mad Max. And
yep.
Those are guys we knew over here, but us B-movies, we would look to the trailers. If we've seen any of those, we'd be like, okay, I got to see it.
Well, there's another guy we should at least give a nice nod off to that we had on the podcast for both of us, and he's been on mine, is Mark Savage. He's from Australia.
Yeah.
And he's another guy that you should check into. But the Australian film industry is still very vibrant, but it's not as accessible as it once was, I think, in a lot of ways. But, you know, again, we want to just really celebrate the gifts that David Guilipil Dalasagnu, that's how you pronounce it, Dalasagnu, gave to us. And
amen.
And that's basically all I have, Stephen. Why don't you give us a little background about what you're planning to do on your network and what's going on with you?
I've got a couple of Christmas shows coming up, but that's it. And if you want to hear my Christmas mix, get on Spotify, look up Cultside Radio's Christmas mix, and you'll hear none of the average ones. I can promise you won't hear no damn Mariah Carey.
Yeah, and we actually are going to be doing a show, our second show on Christmas music on Saturday. And I got to tell you, I haven't told you this yet. I picked a very special song, and I am going to dedicated to you. You know what that song is?
What?
It's a Wonderful Life by Fishbone.
Yeah. I prefer Saint Nick, you devil, you.
You know, you are a huge Fishbone fan, and you are the reason that I got into it.
You heard that one, Carl? Saint Nick, you devil, you, where he talks about Saint Nick coming in his house and drinking all of his booze?
No, I haven't seen.
You let the dog out.
I know. But yeah, It's a Wonderful Life is going to be on my mix, and that's going to be Rachel, TC, and myself. Tomorrow, Rachel and I will be doing a commentary watch on The Ref. The next Wednesday, a week from tomorrow, we're going to be doing Klaus. And why don't you tell us what you think of Klaus and what
Klaus
it's about?
Klaus is just gorgeous. It's great. It should have won the Oscar for Best Animated Film last year.
But it didn't. But it's really good. And it's about a postman in a very, very remote area who runs across this character who makes toys, kind of scary. And it goes on from there. It's a wonderful film, and we'll be doing that. We're
J.K.
also planning...
Simmons fills the movie as the old man who's building toys.
Absolutely. It's a wonderful film, and you should definitely check it out. And then on
Netflix.
Christmas night, we're going to do a final Christmas music show. And so that's basically what we have planned. There will be other shows out there. I know that on Friday, for example, Adam is going to be doing the Cathode Ray Mission, and I'll be part of the group, and we'll be talking about the filmography of Robert Altman. And why don't you just say what you said to me when you called me earlier this morning?
Yeah, you do not need to be on that show. You will not let none of them talk.
Why? Because I'm such an Altman fan? Is that why? Maybe that's why I should be on the show.
No, that's why you shouldn't. Because you have five people. Five people need to talk.
No, actually, Adam is really good about that. Adam controls all of us. It's kind of scary. Controlling me. That doesn't happen often. But that's what we got planned.
Yes, it does. It's called the mute button, and it works.
Oh. Anyway, Stephen, it is truly a pleasure to have you back on, and you're welcome anytime. So whatever we're doing, if you want to pop in, just let me know. All right. And
happy holidays, everybody.
Absolutely, and thank you very much for listening, and we will see you tomorrow at 8 p.m. for a commentary watch on The Ref. So we'll see you tomorrow. All right, folks. Thanks a lot. Thank you, Stephen, for being on. Really appreciate it.